Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views. On this one, on the 23rd anniversary of this event, it's probably the most controversial event in pro wrestling history, most controversial pay-per-view in wrestling history, mainly for just, you know, the main event. I am, of course, talking about Survivor Series 1997. As I said, 23 years ago today, November 9th, 1997, and I was going to wear my Bret Hart sunglasses that those of you watching on YouTube see right behind me. But, you know, then I would not have been able to read my notes because everything would look pink and slightly blurry. So, there you go. But, yes, this event, I remember very distinctly watching this when I was younger. Not so much the matches themselves, but just, of course, you know, the main event as it was. And certain other parts of this pay-per-view, which, I mean, I will get to it. But, yeah, I mean, most fans remember this pay-per-view specifically for the events of the main event on this card, which, I mean, of course, you know, it was the most talked about event or talked about moment in wrestling that year. So, of course, it's going to be, you know, the thing that everyone remembers most from the pay-per-view. But there's a lot more that happened on this show besides just that. And that's what this is going to be. And I have my notes right here. Let me see. I got one, two, three pages worth of notes that I have on here. So let's get right to it. And we had the opening match. It is the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, teaming up with the new Blackjacks, which was Blackjack Bradshaw and Blackjack Windham, taking on the team of the Godwins, Henry Godwin and Phineas Godwin, and the newly christened New Age Outlaws, which was Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. And during the Road Dogg's entrance promo, which, you know, he always did those entrance promos when he became Road Dogg, that, you know, we all became, you know, was very synonymous with his character and we all loved them. He referred to the Headbangers and the Blackjacks as steers and queers, which I did not remember him saying that, but, you know, of course, this was the start of the Attitude Era, or around the start of the Attitude Era, rather. And yeah, you can't really say those kind of things nowadays. It would get a lot of people upset, but back then, people didn't care as much, and, you know, that's just sign of the times for sure. Now, the match itself, I mean, it was very good. I thought it was very good, at least. I mean, had a good pace, action was solid. You know, had something for everybody. If you're a fan of these guys, you know, and funnily, like, it's funny because, like, looking at it on paper, you would think that these are just a bunch of nobodies at the time, especially, but there's four WWE Hall of Famers featured in this match: Barry Windham, Bradshaw, aka JBL, and then Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, who were inducted last year as part of DX. So yeah, there's four Hall of Famers in this match, amazingly enough. But yeah, like I said, they had a good pace, action was solid, fans were hot from start to finish, which, I mean, yeah, I know because the pandemic, fans aren't around, but, you know, even before the pandemics and the habit and the fans weren't around, fans weren't really as hot from start to finish for a lot of these matches. But back then, they were hot for everything. But eventually the Outlaws secured the victory for their team after Billy Gunn snuck in a tag from Road Dogg to get the pin on Thrasher, who was the lone member of his team by that point. But yeah, it was a good match. I mean, I was a fan, generally a fan, of the Headbangers and the New Age Outlaws and the Godwins at the time. New Blackjacks, I was about them, but, you know, eventually Bradshaw became one of my favorites. You know, Barry Windham was, you know, of course, he's a legend, Hall of Famer, world champion, but I was not really familiar with him, like, you know, fans of the NWA were by that point. You know, but then the next matchup, we had another elimination tag team match. It was the Truth Commission, which was Kurgan the Interrogator, the Jackal, who is, you know, Don Callis, who co-runs Impact Wrestling, and Sniper, who I don't know what his actual name was, and Recon, who would become Bull Buchanan later on, against the Disciples of Apocalypse, which was Crush, Skull and 8-Ball, and Chains, aka the Underfaker, who fought The Undertaker at SummerSlam 1994. And also his real name is Brian Lee. He had a good stint in ECW, which included a scaffold match against Tommy Dreamer. Honestly, I'm surprised that I actually enjoyed this match. I didn't expect much from it, considering the people that were involved, but it's just, you know, it's just interesting because, like I say, like, because Kurgan, You know, he would go on to become part of the Oddities, which, you know, got him majorly over with the fans. Fans loved the Oddities. You know, and then he quietly retired from wrestling and has had a pretty good Hollywood career. I mean, he's starred in some, you know, not starred, but he's featured in a lot of pretty big movies. He was in 300, that big giant creature that Leonidas decapitates in battle. That was him. He was in Pacific Rim. I believe he was also featured on the Strain on FX. He was in Deadpool. He was one of the mutants in Deadpool 2. Yeah. I don't know, he's had a lot more. I mean, you can check his IMDb profile. But yeah, he's done very well for himself in Hollywood. So, you know, if he never comes back to he's never going to come back to wrestling, and I don't blame him. He's doing good in Hollywood. But yeah, match, I surprisingly enjoyed it very much, and good hard-hitting match. Not a lot of breathing room, which is good. I mean, it wasn't very long, but I think that actually helped the match, you know, and really, because considering the participants, you don't want the match to go too long. But then in the end, Kurgan scored the win for his team with a powerful sidewalk slam on Crush, because they were the final two members of their respective teams. And then next up, they had a video package where they asked the fans in attendance in Montreal who they think is going to win the main event. And of course, because it was Montreal, Quebec, Canada, majority of the fans were in favor of Bret Hart. So, but there were quite a few that were happily cheering for Shawn Michaels. So, yeah. And then also we had America Online, remember that? Segment where they showed back, they were backstage, and they had Stone Cold Steve Austin speaking to fans on America Online, and Kevin Kelly briefly spoke with him as well. You know, where Austin just, you know, did his usual odd Stone Cold thing, saying he's gonna open up a can of whoop ass, and you know, we love him for that. But then the next matchup we had was Team USA, which was Vader, Goldust, Marvelous Mark Merrill alongside Sable, and the debuting Steve Blackman. Yes, this was the debut WWF match for Steve Blackman versus Team Canada, which was the British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Doug Furness, and Philip Lafon. And one of the things that actually I didn't remember it until rewatching it again now, that Team USA, when they came out for the match, their entrance music they had was Kurt Angle's theme song that would become his 2 years later, which I just thought was pretty funny. And also a variation of that theme was also the theme song for The Patriot, who was there during the summer. So, yeah. But yeah, the match, it was pretty good. It was not bad. I honestly just really wasn't that into it, though, which surprised me that I was not that into it, because especially, you know, when you look at who was involved in the match. You got so many, all these legends and Hall of Famers featured. So, but I mean, yeah, it was not a bad match. I mean, I did enjoy it. It's just I didn't feel as invested in it as I probably would have been, you know, or should have been, rather. And also, this was around the time when Goldust and Marlena had split up, because the month before, Brian Pillman had passed away, and they were in the middle of their storyline over Marlena. And, of course, that was going to have a different payoff in the end, but because he passed away, they had to rewrite the whole story. So they just had them split up, and Goldust became a chicken shit heel. So, and he played it very well. So, but you know, Team Canada would go on to be victorious after Davey Boy used the ring bell on Vader while the referee was distracted by Goldust. I believe he was distracted by Goldust. No, he was distracted by Doug Furness, who had just been eliminated by Vader. Yeah. And then next up, we had Kane versus Mankind, and this was Kane's first pay-per-view match first pay-per-view match, as the Kane character. Because, you know, of course, he had already been Dr. Isaac Yankum fighting Bret Hart at SummerSlam 95 and a few other pay-per-view appearances, and also he had been the fake Diesel the year before. This was a fun match. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed it a lot more than I remembered enjoying it when it happened back then. And the pace was pretty slow, but that's how a lot of those early Kane matches were at the time. Much like the early years of The Undertaker, a lot of his matches were very slow paced. But in the end, also the entire match was under the red lights, much like the Fiend's matches were for a little bit. But the lights weren't quite as red as they were for the Fiend. And also, I think a lot of fans forget that they used to do this for Kane. You know, obviously they stopped doing it, you know, a few months later, much just like with the Fiend. So, and of course, the highlight of the match was Mankind was on the apron after he had pulled the mandible claw on Paul Bearer. Because Paul Bearer had called Mankind a pebble, trying to be, you know, belittling him and all that. And then he got up on the apron, and Kane grabbed him by the throat and launched him into the announcer table. You know, the Spanish one, of course, because Spanish announcer table. But yeah, he just launched him, like, here, like, the apron, like, if you're watching this on YouTube, the apron is right here, and the table is right here where my notepad is, and he just launched him, boom, right in through the table. That was cool. But, you know, Kane would, of course, go on to win after a tombstone, or his variation of the tombstone, where instead of Undertaker, where he gets on his tippy toes and then, boom, drops him, Kane would just go, it would be more like a snap pile driver, like, boom, boom. So, and then next we had a backstage interview with a very young Michael Cole, with Vince McMahon and Sergeant Slaughter talking about the main event. Because, you know, there's a lot of hype, and a lot of build-up, and a lot of unanswered questions going into this main event, so. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Next up, we had another elimination tag team match. It was the Nation of Domination, which was, of course, Farouk, The Rock, who was still Rocky Maivia at the time, D'Lo Brown, and Kama Mustafa, taking on the team of Kent Shamrock, The Road Warriors, and Ahmed Johnson. And this, honestly, this was probably my favorite elimination matches on this pay-per-view. And I would say probably the opening match was my second favorite. But yeah, this one is my favorite of the elimination matches. Which again, you know, again, four Hall of Famers featured in this match. We got Farouk, Ron Simmons, he's a Hall of Famer, and Kama, the Godfather, he's a Hall of Famer, and of course the Road Warriors are Hall of Famers as well. A lot of Hall of Famers featured on this pay-per-view. Let me look over a count. See, yeah, Bradshaw, Barry Windham, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, that's four, and then Davey Boy and Jim Neidhart, that's six, Mick Foley, that's seven, and Ron Simmons, Godfather, it's 10, Road Warriors, it's 12, and we got Austin and Michaels and Brett. So yeah, this pay-per-view was filled with quite a few WWE Hall of Famers. That's pretty cool. But yeah, the thing that's most that I remember most about this match, though, back then and right now, is even today as well, that this is where they planted the seeds of the feud between Ken Shamrock and The Rock, which, I mean, that's why The Rock was featured during Ken Shamrock's Hall of Fame segment at Bound for Glory last month. And yeah, this planted the seeds for their feud that they would have in the early months of 1998 for the Intercontinental title, which was a very good feud, very underrated feud, and I'm disappointed that Ken Shamrock did not get any significant wins during that feud, because this is a time when Shamrock was at his hottest. So, but yeah, you know, they were the surviving members of their team, and Shamrock eventually tapped out to the ankle lock, much to the delight of the fans in attendance in Montreal. Then up next, we had Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Owen Hart for the Intercontinental Championship. And of course, this was the rematch from their match that they had at SummerSlam, where Austin had messed up his neck during the botched pile driver spot in that one. You know, Austin was out for 3 months after that, and, you know, he was cleared to come back and wrestle, and, you know, that's where we got this match. And I mean, it wasn't as good as their SummerSlam match, for obvious reasons, but it was still pretty good. I mean, it served the purpose that it needed to serve, which was to get the IC title back on Austin, because they were building him up as the next big thing, you know, to steal a phrase. Which, yeah, of course it happened. Austin got Owen with the stunner for the 1-2-3, new Intercontinental Champion. And funnily enough, Austin is, to my recollection at least, the only two-time Intercontinental Champion to have never been pinned for the title either time. Two-time champion, never been defeated for it. That's just a fascinating little bit of trivia, in my opinion. And then we reach our... Oh, no, before we get to that, we had the WWF Attitude vignette that was, I guess, the official launching of the Attitude Era, which, you know, very nostalgic, of course. And yeah, I got chills when I was watching it again last night. So I'm recording this Sunday afternoon, November the 8th. I watched this Saturday night, November 7th, and have all my notes here. But yeah, now we get to the main event. Shawn Michaels, who was the reigning European champion at the time, versus Bret the Hitman Hart, WWF champion, for the WWF title. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see on my notepad, right under where it says Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels, I do not have any notes at all, because really, what notes can I take to discuss this match that hasn't been discussed a million times already by other YouTube channels that are much better than mine? Because really, the only thing I can say about this match, other than, you know, the obvious thing, is the match itself was actually a great match, as all their matches were. And I think a lot of fans forget how great the match actually was, and was building up to be, you know, one of the greatest matches ever. And up until the moment, of course. But the only things I also remember very distinctly was when my brother and I, we were watching it live, that we were both sitting on our living room floor, and my parents were sitting on the couch watching it with us. And for some reason, I remember we were eating Chinese food that night. I don't know why I remember that, but I do remember that we had Chinese food that night for some reason. I could be wrong. I would have to ask my brother. He might remember it better than I do. But yeah, I remember distinctly. Yeah, we were eating Chinese food. We were both sitting on the floor. My parents were sitting on the couch, and we were all watching. And when it got to the end of the match, when Shawn puts the sharpshooter on Bret and Earl Hebner is ringing, signaling for the bell, that we all sat there. We all sat there confused, because I mean, my brother and I, this was around the time when we were becoming more aware of the predetermination aspect of professional wrestling. I mean, my parents had already known that way before us, of course, but we were becoming more familiar with that aspect of it, and all of us were just wondering, like, that wasn't supposed to happen. Like, that's not how it was supposed to end. And we all knew that even back then. And it was just a very, very weird feeling, you know, at that age. I was 10 years old. My brother had just turned 12, because I turned 10 in 96. His birthday is at September. So he had just turned 12, and I was going to be 11 the following month. But yeah, I just remembered, even at that age, that when we were still learning about that stuff, we all knew. That's not how it was supposed to happen. That wasn't supposed to happen that way. And, you know, of course, the whole lore and history of the Montreal Screwjob, you know, the story leading up to that point, because this was when Bret and Shawn still had legitimate hatred for each other. I mean, they've, of course, have since patched things up. As we saw a little over 10 years ago, when Bret returned to WWE as the host of Monday Night Raw, and then they embraced each other at the Hall of Fame last year, and had the Greatest Rivalries documentary, which is a great documentary. And it's just, yeah, this, yeah, they had legitimate hatred, and rewatching it now, it's like, yeah, you could see, you know, that they hated each other, but up until the ending of the match, they were doing business. You know, they were doing business, as they would say. It's just, I mean, like I said, like, so many people have talked about, have talked the Montreal Screwjob to death. I mean, they did an episode of Dark Side of the Ring talking about it. And What Culture, when they do their top 10 lists, almost every time there's the Montreal Screwjob, or the JBL beating up Blue Meaning at One Night Stand is on there too. But yeah, this is the most, and it's not even, you know, like, in WWF at least, then when they talk about Screwjobs, this is not the original Screwjob. The first one that I can remember actually documented was when they screwed over Wendy Richter to get the women's title off of her back in the 80s. But this one is more known, because this was on live pay-per-view for the whole world to see, whereas the Wendy Richter situation was more self-contained within people of Madison Square Garden, I think it was. But Yeah. You know, Sean put Brett in the sharpshooter, and the way it was supposed to go, according to Bret Hart and other people that involved at the time, that he would reverse it and put the sharpshooter on Sean. Then members of DX would come out, and then members of the Hart Foundation would come out, and then it would end in a double DQ squash, you know, smosh, whatever is the, you know, phrasing that I remember Brett using in the Wrestling with Shadows documentary. It'll be just basically just some bullshit finish where nobody wins. But of course, that's not how it went down. You know, when Sean locked in that sharpshooter, Earl Hebner signaled for the bell. Vince was, you know, yelling at the timekeeper to signal for the bell. And that's where we get Brett spitting in Vince's face. And then Shawn Michaels pretending to storm out with the bell in anger. And as shown in the Wrestling with Shadows documentary, Brett is in the locker room. He confronts Sean, and Sean swears to God he had no idea. And then the whole story of, you know, Vince enters the locker room, and Brett punches Vince out with a single punch, supposedly with a single punch. Depending on which version of the story to hear and who you choose to believe, you know, Brett that talks about how they had like a scuffle in the middle of it, and a lot of people they've confirmed that they did have like a hockey fight almost, going on in there. And then Brett just with one like uppercut punch, as it's described by some people, that's what he does. So, yeah. But yeah, again, if you take out the screw job finish, the match itself was awesome. It really was. And a lot of people tend to forget that because of how the match ended and the whole history behind that. Which is a shame, you know, that ending overshadows what was a very good match, what was an awesome match, and what could have been a truly great match. But, rest is history, as they say. And without that moment, who knows where the business would be today. But yeah, that's going to do it for this edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views. I hope it was enjoyable for you guys. And if you've never seen this pay-per-view, I highly recommend that you do. Like I said, even though the pay-per-view is mainly remembered for the screw job at the end, the rest of the pay-per-view is pretty damn solid. And so I encourage you to check that out. And I also encourage you to check out my past entries of Classic Wrestling pay-per-views, where I talked about Halloween Havoc 98 last month, the Mind Games in Your House back in September, SummerSlam 1998, and back in August. And I was going to do one in July, but shit happened. One Night ECW One Night Stand 2005, Beware of Dog in Your House, ECW Barely Legal, WrestleMania, original WrestleMania from 1985, Super Brawl 2001, Royal Rumble 2000, Starrcade 97, Survivor Series 2002, and Bad Blood in Your House from 1997 as well. And I will have more of those coming very soon, and I'm going to try my best to keep up with them. And if I have the free time, I might even throw a bonus Classic Wrestling pay-per-view sometimes. Not sure when I'm going to actually get to do that, but hey, I might do one this month. We'll see. I mean, it's only the beginning of the month. Who knows? And also, check out my retro film reviews, my other regular movie reviews, my video game reviews. I have one coming up next month that I've been planning on doing for a while. Not sure if I'm going to cover the whole series or just one entry of the game. I'll figure that out before then. My other podcast episodes that I have on here, all those you can find in the archives, whether you subscribe to the Minisize Podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, and Anchor. All the direct links to those are in the description for this episode. So choose one of those if you'd like. And if you'd like to support the Minisize Podcast, you can do so by joining my Patreon for $1 a month. I'm just only asking for $1 a month. It's not much. Or if you'd like to support me by purchasing something from the Minotides Podcast store. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see I'm wearing Minotides Podcast t-shirt right there. Several designs that are available on there, and I'm working on some other ones currently as well. While I've been I'm dealing with my unexpected week off that I had this past week. Yeah, those of you who know, you know. And those of you who don't know, and you'd like to ask, follow me on my social media. All the links to those are in the description as well. Twitter, Instagram, Vero, Snapchat, if you're into Snapchat. You can find all of those anywhere. And also my friend Julie, you can, if you can, you can also continue to contribute to her GoFundMe. That link is in the description as well. And also the newest mental health campaign that I launched a week ago. This one I called Sometimes It's Okay to Be Okay. Or sorry, Sometimes It's Okay to Not Be Okay, rather. Sorry, my mind's a little somewhere else at the moment. Yeah, the campaign is called Sometimes It's Okay to Not Be Okay, which I'm actually going to do a mental health podcast under with that subject. The link for that is in the description as well. Now, of course, money for that raised goes to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I launched it on November 1st. That will go all the way to December 1st. Currently, nobody has made a contribution to it yet, which is unfortunate. And but hopefully by the end of this thing, somebody will have contributed something. But in the meantime, thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I truly and genuinely do. And I hope you all are taking care of yourselves and your loved ones, and that you're staying safe and staying healthy. And this has been Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views from the Minute Tights Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all on the next one. Bye-bye.